All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fuck Knicks? What the fuck Canadians? What's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast. Welcome to it. Couple of things. Some things were brought to my attention about the last show when I did a sort of a ramble on the pride of being a childless cat lady man, and sort of a kind of a rallying cry to all people that choose not to have kids and why that's okay and why it's not a detriment to those individuals or to their patriotism necessarily. And I just kind of like talked about that, childless people who live with it and want it that way. But I got a couple of emails that kind of brought it to my attention that not everybody who doesn't have children didn't want them. And I hear you. I have that in my family. My brother and his wife back in the day couldn't have their own kids. They chose to adopt. But I know that's another form of childlessness. And I want to acknowledge that. And I apologize leaving you out. But I do know that you get lumped in with the sort of aggressive attack by the right on childless people, and your anger should be even deeper than those of us who choose not to have them for whatever reason we fucking want to. So shout out to you, and my heart goes out to you. And I'm sure you take beautiful care of your animals and also have a lot of love for the kids in your family, extended family. Another thing, just in terms of people who listen to my show and how interesting they are, really, you know, because I ramble on here a bit. And I think a couple episodes ago, I was yammering on. This is the great age of the yammering. This is the age of the yammering. And I think I've called it that before. The age of impending fascism and nonstop yammering, primarily by white guys with microphones. On all levels, there's no end to it. See, this scrolling business that I've got myself involved in, sometimes good, sometimes bad, but it does really kind of like punch through the fact that there's a lot of dudes with microphones talking about fucking nothing. If I see another group of 2 to 5 guys sitting around a table with microphones discussing things like, well, you know, when was the last time you shit your pants? Or, what's the worst situation you farted in? Or, you know, did your sister ever date someone you hated? What'd you do about that? It's sort of like an infinite loop of mediocre afternoon radio talk. But that's the world we live in. And then, of course, there's politics. But my fans or my people, my listeners, many are very thoughtful. Many are very sensitive. Many are angry. Many are creative. It's a pretty, you know, broad spectrum of a lot of different types of sensitivities. I wouldn't put them all on the dramatic cluster of personality disorders, but you know, many are. But some of them are functioning people. Most of you. I'm just making a joke. But the point being is I rambled on a bit about seagulls the other day, kind of innocently, because there's one that seems to be just outside of my window up here on the 17th floor of this building I'm in. A couple of them I see quite often, you know, kind of circling the Canadian flag on the building next door. And I can't even remember exactly what I was talking about, but I do remember singing Bad Company Seagull. But it was about a story about this seagull and then a seagull I saw with a chicken wing in his mouth back when I was actually tripping on mushrooms with my roommate Lance in college. And you know, it was really something. It was nothing really. It was just something that was happening in my periphery, and I needed to talk about something. But I got an email, you know, about some guy, Liam. He writes 2 quick points about gulls. So this is how this landed with this guy. First, I'm reading it. The 2 gulls you were reflecting on, Vancouver, Boston, might have been 2 entirely different species. Maybe the former was a Glaucos winged gull. Did it have gray rather than black wingtips? Don't know, Liam. While the latter was an American herring gull, black wingtips with white mirrors. Don't know. Didn't notice any rear views. Folks call these and all sorts of other species, quote unquote, seagulls, but there's a lot of fascinating diversity out there. Keep an eye out for little details, and you might be surprised. Now, Maybe this will inspire me to be a little more kind of focused and in depth with my bird watching, but I don't think so. I'm okay with just looking at birds. I sit on my porch and I look at birds. I enjoy birds, and I know there's a lot of biodiversity in the bird world, so much. And I've got a book on my porch with all the different birds. I've looked it up a couple of times. I got the app for the bird songs, which works pretty well. But I mean, once you get the three or four that are around your house, you've done it. Those are the ones. And I can't even tell you which ones are which. And I'm not even sure, Liam, that I'm going to really, I've got to get binoculars to do the seagull research. But I appreciate that somehow or another me rambling about seagulls made you took it upon yourself to teach me a little something, and I'll take it because it was not a reaction that I thought I'd get about the birds. And I thank you for listening. But then there was the second part of the email. He goes, second, I'm not surprised to hear you thought differently of the Boston bird scarfing a chicken wing, but my colleagues and I have done some research on the history of gull culling and conservation, and I'll offer this as a warning. People seem to project their fears about humanity onto gulls, especially, but not limited to, their own vices and anxieties about urban decay. Now, that's a big thought. It's a big idea. Anthropomorphism in general is something we all do. All lovers of animals. We will create fairly big and in-depth and personalities to our animals, but maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. Maybe that bird was just eating garbage. It's probably not. I guess my point was there was something apocalyptic about a leftover chicken wing in a bird's mouth. Sure. Maybe I read into it. But again, Liam, thank you for your email. I appreciate it. And then I do, and I learned something, and I'm thinking about things. But this was another email I got, someone responding to my latest conversation with Moon Zappa and Beth Stelling. And this person said, I also appreciate your recent shout-outs to the social work profession. In social work school, we were taught that one way to think about where people are is through a biopsychosocial model. Wow. Where bio is whatever brain chemistry is in your DNA. Psycho is how you were raised. And social is the broader community, how people treat your group, racism, etc. Thought you might find that useful. I do, goddammit. I do find it useful. All these things are just kind of percolating in my brain. I'm sorry about the phones in the other room. I'm not going to go turn off the ringer. Then today I'm talking to somebody who said they knew somebody with histrionic personality disorder. And I'm like, what is that? What is that? Is this a new one? And then I learned something about the dramatic cluster of personality disorders, which I referenced earlier. There's an A cluster, a B cluster, and a C cluster. The A cluster, odd or eccentric disorders, paranoid personality disorder, schizoid personality disorder, schizotypal personality disorder. There's cluster B, emotional or erratic disorders, antisocial personality disorder, borderline personality disorder, histrionic personality disorder, which is pervasive pattern of attention-seeking behavior, including excessive emotions, an impressionistic style of speech, inappropriate seduction, exhibitionism, and egocentrism. Then there's narcissistic personality disorder on that B cluster. And then cluster C, you have avoidant personality disorder, dependent personality disorder, obsessive compulsive personality disorder. And these kind of things just blow my mind that all this stuff is categorized. There are diagnoses, there are profiles. But when I look at almost all of these, I would say all of these are, many people I've known in comedy. Including myself on some level. But obviously everybody has traits of this or that. But whether you are pathological, that's up to a doctor to decide. But so my brain full of a lot of stuff, a lot of interesting stuff. Know a little bit more about gulls. We'll know a little bit more about social work. And now, I'm going to be mildly down the rabbit hole of the cluster of emotional disorders. Because we all want answers. We all want answers, folks. The dramatic cluster of personality disorders. Today on the show, I talked to Blair Saki. She's very funny. She's a comedian with a brand new comedy special that just came out, Blair Saki, Live at the Big Dog. I don't know. She's one of these people that I kind of saw around, and then I saw some clips of her, and it's a rare thing, man, to see a truly unique comedian with a very specific point of view, specific voice, specific delivery. It doesn't happen that often. They're out there, but they are, I would say, underappreciated, because when you're sort of dealing in a world where the major streaming services put most of their effort and money behind, you know, mildly charismatic, efficiently talented, mediocre people and hacks, you know, it becomes a problem, because, and it's always been this way. Look, I'm not going to sit here and complain like some old man about the state of comedy or the state of the art or what I think about other comics. You know, I'm pretty vocal about that, and I've talked shit about other comics before, and I guess because, I don't know, I got this weird DM from some guy. He's like, how does it feel to have better jokes than almost any other comedian but not be successful because you come across as arrogant and condescending? Yeah, that, I guess that might be because I'm better. But thank you for the note, and I'm glad to find a compliment in the middle of that trolling garbage. But it is sort of an interesting idea that, you know, when somebody truly unique kind of really surfaces and becomes, you know, very popular, it's kind of an amazing thing because they're straddling something. I had this weird turn in thought today about the success of, you know, the sort of kind of pseudo edgelord, you know, anti-woke, you know, I might get canceled hack culture of comedy, and just the sort of like gratuitous, you know, shock driven filth comedy, which I've done in my life. I'm not judging that part of it, but the first part maybe is that ultimately, on some level, certainly since you know Dice became huge, this has always been, you know, a strong kind of a tribe of comedy. And it's always been popular with certain people, and other comedy is popular with other people. But there is a strata, you know, there is a line of truly gifted comics and truly talented people, and they run the gamut of points of view and everything else. I think that what's happening now, just by virtue of technology and the ability to build massive audiences based on, you know, relatively little talent, is that it's all much bigger. And I just believe that, you know, when you lower the bar, you know, without any real balance, is no one really is challenged in a deep way, and genius gets marginalized. And I always think it's been that way. You know, high bar work in a low bar world is always relatively underappreciated, unless it's the Olympics. But that's just the way it is, you know. But there is this culture of judging people's success by the number of followers, the number of hits, and certainly by money, which, you know, oddly has never really been any, those have never been any of my goals. You certainly want to find an audience, but if I really wanted to make money in terms of what I do creatively, I would have picked a fucking different profession. But it picked me. It picked me. Someone hipped me to the fact that St. Vincent was playing here night before last in Vancouver. And I went because I had interviewed her and I've seen her around a bit. And I had her email address and I wrote to her, Annie, are you playing? Is this still your email? Can I come? And she put me on the list, and it was spectacular. What a great fucking performer. And she's another one. She's a person that takes a lot of risks. Changes up her sound, explores, does interesting shit with music, and is a fucking awesome performer. If you have an opportunity to go see St. Vincent on this tour, do it. Even if you're not sure about her or don't know about her or only know one record, just go. It's a fucking great show. I stayed for the whole show. You know me. How often do I stay for the whole show? So Blair Saki, I love this comedian. She's very funny. She's a unique thing, a unique style, a unique delivery, a unique way of joke writing, a unique way of talking. It's just she's a unique person. And I will always celebrate the unique people versus the sort of the never-ending parade of mildly charismatic, efficiently talented mediocre acts. Yeah, maybe they speak to most of the country, and maybe that's why, you know, I have my audience and they have theirs, and mine's just the right size for me. Just the right size. So Blair's new special is called Live from the Big Dog. It's available now at veeps.com. And this is me talking to Blair for really the first time. Do you like Black Sabbath?
I can't say I'm super versed.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's not a trick question. It's not a game changer. It's not a deal breaker.
Oh, no. I have a commitment to 100% candor.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Is this a new commitment? Or is
no.
But it's a conscious choice?
Yes.
So you're just going to, like, be honest no matter what?
I mean, not no. Well, I guess I'll just, I would be like, I can't answer that, or I don't know the answer.
That's good.
Like, I've never heard of that.
Right. So instead of going like, or just say like, I don't know.
Yeah, because I'm like, oh, that's real connection, you know?
Yeah.
I'm also painfully literal.
Yeah.
Where like, because I say what I mean,
yeah,
that I assume everyone else is doing that.
Right.
And my therapist is always like, no, that's not
how people interact. They kind of politely say what they need to say to get through that immediate moment.
Yeah.
And then they walk away and judge.
Yeah, but not honesty, like, you know, those other people that will say, like, it will be harsh or acerbic. And they're like, right. I'm just being honest. I don't do that either.
I learned a lesson about that.
I think a lot of comedians
are like that. Well, yeah, because we assume that we can all take it, yet we're all the most sensitive idiots in the world. And we pretend like we can take it. And then it just festers. And you walk away going, fuck that guy.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Because absolutely. Because you're like, oh, I'm being honest with concern for how you will take it.
Yeah.
Not like I'm going to drop a freaking bazooka on you.
Right. That's what some guy told me years ago in the rooms.
Yes.
He was like, because I was so proud of myself. I was like sober a minute. And I just told, I was like, I think I was married at the time. And I just told that woman some horrible truths.
Sure.
Because I thought, like, this is what you do when you're sober. And it was not what to do.
Right.
And this guy says to me, you can't use honesty as a weapon.
Sure.
And I'm like, oh, fuck. Now I'm going to remember that for the rest of my life.
Yeah, well, I think sometimes you have to swing that way to get to the middle.
Yeah, always.
Yeah.
So, like, I think I've been pronouncing your name wrong.
Oh, that's fine. You know, nothing offends me less. I rarely even correct people. I'm like, it's interpretive. Whatever you want.
But you say it's Saki?
Saki, sure. My grandpa decided that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But was it Sochi?
Yes.
But he said Saki.
Yeah. He
Italian guy?
Yes. And also, apparently, the rumor is that there was Italian racism, which is hard to believe, but you know,
if there's a race, there's racism.
Yeah. Well, my great grandfather actually, like, my dad's whole side is from back east. He's 100% Italian.
Yeah.
And like my great grandfather had fruit stands in the Bronx.
Oh, yeah.
And like actually got his throat slashed. Because he, like, refused to pay, like, the tax. He lived, which is even crazier.
With the scar?
Yeah, they, like, made him. It was called the Black Hand back then. Right,
before it was even the mafia.
Yes, and they made him go. And then they made him go back to Italy for 2 years.
What, just like Godfather 2?
I know. Yeah.
And he could have been at the fruit stand where the Godfather was shot.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was a wild thing. So he changed his name, like, I think he worked for, like, Xerox or something, my grandpa.
Yeah.
And he changed his name to Dan Stewart from...
So, okay, wait. So he goes back to Italy. After they
cut his throat. Oh, no, this isn't him. This is a different...
Oh, this you're talking about your great-grandfather.
Yeah.
The one with the fruit stand.
Yeah.
He goes back to Italy.
Yeah.
Never to return?
Oh, no, they returned.
They came back.
That was my grandma's father.
Okay, so... Yeah. But, like, this is part of the family mythology.
Yeah.
Got his throat cut by the Black Hand because he wouldn't give them shakedown money.
Yeah.
And then got sent back to where the Black Hand comes from.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I know.
And then he came back.
Came back.
Oh, tough, my God.
Tough guy.
Yeah, after you get your throat cut and then have to go home.
Yeah, I'd be like, I think I'd be like, I'm good here. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, the pasta's good here. No need.
It's good enough.
Yeah.
But why did he... Why do you think he went back?
To Italy. New York?
No.
Oh, no, they made him go back to Italy.
The Black Hand did?
Yeah.
That was his punishment?
Yeah. They forced exile. And I don't even have that much information about this. The way that I know about this is one handwritten account from my great aunt.
Yes.
Who just died at 99 years old.
That's
so, like,
we
don't have that much info.
But that's a pretty good story. It doesn't seem like one of those ones that you'd make up, especially they sent him home part.
Right.
Because you never hear that part.
Yeah, he was only there for 2 years.
In Italy?
Yeah, like the
exile.
The exile. Yeah.
So that was his punishment to go and I wonder what he did over there. You have no idea.
No, I have like barely information.
And then your mom was in from the Bronx?
No, no, this is my dad's side. My mom is from Palos Verdes.
So your what was the Xerox story? That was your grandfather?
Oh, that was my grandpa, my dad's dad. Yeah.
He lost the Sochi.
Yeah, so like apparently just like from that era, like, you know, I guess if you were Italian, you sounded uneducated or something. So he changed his name to like an American name, which is so hard to believe now, you know?
Stuart. Yeah. Well, I guess there was, it must have been a time when that first wave of immigrants came in, like with all of them, you know, Irish had a rough go at it.
Yeah.
The Italians, but they got tough. And the Jews just figured out a way to work the system.
Yeah. Totally.
But there were some tough Jews. Yeah, you know, there were Jewish boxers, Jewish mobsters, all that stuff. But I guess they all
would argue you're all tough. getting through all that. Yeah. I would argue you're a resilient people.
Seems like it.
Yeah.
it was an old Lenny Bruce bit about, I don't remember how it goes, but you know, the Pharaoh is like, bring in the Jew, he's charming.
Sure.
Yeah. But yeah, I guess it was rough for everybody. But so how does your dad get from there to here? Your grandfather was at Xerox in New York?
I don't know.
Stewart?
Like, and I don't even know if it was Xerox. It was like one of those companies. I'm pretty sure it was Xerox, but
why
I'm not?
Not
sure. And he got transferred, my dad's senior year of high school, to Tustin, and so they all moved out.
Where's that?
From New Jersey. Tustin in Orange County.
Jersey.
Yeah.
They were in Jersey.
Yeah, they're in Jersey.
Yeah, I'm Jersey.
Where in Jersey?
I was born in Jersey.
Oh, really?
My people are from Jersey. I like to say I'm genetically Jersey.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where? Pompton Lakes, Bergen County. Where were your people?
I don't really know.
You don't have any people in Jersey anymore?
No. My dad grew up in Maplewood, I believe.
Yeah, I have no idea where that is.
Yeah, I don't know anything about
it. So he comes out here to Tustin. Where's that?
Orange County.
It's Orange County. You already said that. Mm-hmm. Like, but I have no sense of Orange County.
Oh, I guess it would be like Northeast Orange County.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that's like a big shift.
Yes.
And then when does Saki come back? When do they re-own?
Oh, well, he was always Saki. It was just like my dad used that in business, or my grandpa used that in business. That was like his business name. Like the family didn't adopt that name.
So he never legally changed
it. No, nothing.
Did you know these Italian grandparents?
Oh, yeah. I knew my grandparents. I didn't know any of my great-grandparents.
Oh, yeah. Well,
yeah,
he does. Uh-huh. Just pictures.
Yeah.
Oh, that's them, huh?
Yeah.
Wow. Look at that jacket.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
But so it was real Italian shit?
Yeah. Like, my dad... Well, my mom is... Because, you know, I don't look Italian at all. But my dad has, like, dark skin and is, like, full Italian. And
I think you might look a little Italian.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think
thank
so.
Thank you.
And your mom's just...
Scandinavian, 100%, yeah.
California.
Yeah, Swedish, yeah. California,
really?
Grew up in California.
How'd they get here?
I don't really know.
They've been here for a long time?
About that. Yeah.
Agriculture, farming, big business?
No. yeah, they're like, I think they were just like in the furniture business.
All right. Yeah. Had a store?
Yeah.
Oh, furniture store.
Yeah.
Did you go to it?
No.
You didn't know about it?
No.
Like, you didn't know your grandparents on that side?
I did, but like not in their business or anything.
They're already done?
Yeah. Yeah.
Just stories of what it was like.
Yeah.
When they had the couches.
Uh-huh.
So, like, Orange County, now I don't get a sense of what that means. So, what did your dad do out there?
My dad does real estate.
Oh.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
In Orange County.
Uh-huh.
Like, big time?
Commercial, yeah. Mm. Like, he's a...
He develops things?
No, he doesn't develop.
No.
Just, like...
Does, sells it?
Yeah.
Sells the strip malls? Office spaces.
I think more like commercial or like industrial or
industrial.
Something.
Yeah. Place to park the trucks.
I guess so. Yeah.
I got a great place for you to park the trucks, and it's got a warehouse on it.
Yeah, but like my dad came out here, like he didn't grow up with money, and like just is like an ass kicker. Just like started from nothing. Is like
badass Italian guy.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. Tough yeah. guy.
I wouldn't say he's a tough guy, but, like, he's a determined person, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I think we all got our, like, work ethic
yeah.
from there.
How many in the family?
I have two older brothers and then me.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So that's how you got tough.
I guess, like, I don't feel tough in any, I think I'm, like, a really, really gentle soul, soft soul.
Yeah.
But, like, I guess, like, my whole life was, like, about being an athlete. So I guess that part was, like, kind of tough.
Were your brothers athletes?
Yes. My whole, is like, my very all sports focused family.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my, like, what sport?
Well, my brothers and dad were all basketball.
Oh.
And then, like, I played a bunch of sports, but then kind of ended up focusing, like, hardcore on volleyball my whole life.
You're a volleyball jock?
I was, yeah. You're a volleyball jock. Was that shocking to you?
No, I mean, I don't think so. Like, I don't, like, I'm not even sure how I got hip to you, really. We've met before.
We met once just recently in Austin.
No,
with
right.
Rosebud.
I remember that.
Because Rosebud's my best friend.
Yeah, she's great.
Yeah.
And but that was the only time?
Yeah.
But then, like, I don't know, you just appeared somehow, like, I don't know, like, it was recently.
Yeah.
Because I'm, like, old. I don't know what you kids are up to.
Right.
And then I'm not sure where I saw you, but I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
What is this person? She's fucking funny.
Oh, that's so nice. Thank you so much. I mean, that is just like thrilling to
well,
hear
you can't,
from you.
Like, well, I was it? Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, I just want to keep, you know, somehow in the loop.
Yeah.
Because like I was talking to my producer because I don't even know what generation you would be of. Rosebuds, basically.
I'll just vaguely say I'm in my 30s. Yes.
Okay.
Oh, but Rosebud and I started together. I've been doing it about 11 years.
So you're like, you know, you're refined.
Oh,
you've
thank
got
you.
Chops.
Thank you.
You know what you're doing.
Yeah.
But like I get kind of out of the loop, and then I realize like when I started this podcast, it was 2009. It's a long time ago.
Right.
So I was talking to people of that generation who weren't older than you, really.
Right.
But now that I'm an old guy, now it's sort of like, what are these kids doing?
I mean, I think that's just how it goes with comedy, because if you stay in it a long time, like, you know, I'm seeing people like that I've never heard of come up, you know.
There's so many.
Yeah, and I think that it just goes on like that forever.
But now it seems like they're almost virally reproducing.
Sure.
Comics.
Yes, I know. It's extremely saturated.
And it's like, well, it's saturated on social media.
Yeah.
But I don't know what's going on out there in the world, but I know that I don't know people, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't like social media and didn't put any effort into it, and only recently, like this year, started posting clips.
Yeah.
Because like I was always like, you know, I'm gonna be true to myself and
yeah,
do what
and the craft.
Yeah, and I was like, I'm so organic.
Yeah,
I'm so true to the form. I'm not getting mixed up in this clip game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was like, and if I just do what feels right to me, then the right people are going to find me.
Yes.
And to some extent, that was true. But then again, when it come time to me selling tickets, right. I need to have a following.
Yeah. So you're just jocking it up as a volleyball player?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
But were you like a stud? Were you good?
Yes.
Like winning prizes?
Yeah, like every prize.
Really?
Yeah. And it was like, I just came out of
in that high school?
Yeah.
Okay.
And college, and I did like the I trained with the U.S. national team pipeline, like where you'd have to like try out, and then like I'd go to Colorado Springs Training Center for the summer.
You were all in.
Yeah.
You were going to the Olympics.
Like I wanted. I mean, I was like in their training program. I never clearly made it to the national team. I'm also really small.
But was that the goal?
Yeah, like whatever I'm doing, I really am into it. And I was like, oh yeah, I want to be a professional athlete, even though I sniff 5'6" on a good day. I mean, I did about as much as I could with my height in that sport.
So, all right. So, like, is there a position?
Oh yeah, like I was an outside hitter.
Yeah,
this is real inside language.
Teach me about volleyball.
I know.
Maybe that's the one that I'll lock into. Like, I'm not a sports person, but like, man, after I talked to Blair, I can't get enough of this volleyball. How come there's not more on TV?
Yeah, if you took up volleyball, that would be such a turn I would love.
Just me talking volleyball at the opening of every podcast?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't played volleyball literally since I quit, but...
Heartbreak.
No, the opposite. I just never thought about it again.
But this is a funny thing. Like, my brother was kind of a pro tennis player. Uh-huh. Like, he was going for it.
Yeah.
You know, his whole life, and he just did not have whatever the genetic, you know, talent
right.
that is necessary to to get over the hump.
Yeah.
And he had it like, you know, kind of suck that up and
sure.
But you know, then he taught and he did it.
Yeah.
But him, you know, half awake could beat almost anybody.
Sure.
Cause he's so good. Like if you're on the beach and someone's like, you want to play a little volleyball? Would you just fucking devastate everybody?
I mean, maybe, but I haven't done it in years. So who knows if my, like, I used to be able to, I had like a crazy vertical and like I did all sorts of insane like plyometrics training. And
plyometrics?
Yeah.
What is that?
It's,
now it's I think like, I'm going to change my life after
it's
this.
It's like jumping in quickness training and like explosive muscles training.
Like you crouch and then you're like,
sort of.
And people are like, holy shit, good one.
This conversation having with you is so funny to me. But yeah, like I haven't played in years and like I don't really have an interest in it or anything.
Yeah.
It was like a lot of athletes that I knew in all the sports, because I played at UCLA and like people who quit and everything, like they had these huge identity crises.
But I didn't
at all.
So you got to college, you played volleyball.
Yeah.
And then when does it crap out? When are you sort of like, fuck it?
I got a knee surgery and like
injured.
I lost my spot and I like quit. I never like sat the bench.
You couldn't do the explosive jumps anymore? Your plyometrics game was
this
fucked.
Is so funny. Yeah, I couldn't do it. And I was like,
were you out there with your brace? Was it wrapped?
No, it was like I could have easily come back. Like I recovered beautifully, you know?
Oh, good.
I was just done and it just felt great. And like it was so funny because, I mean, it had been so hardcore in my life since I was like 10 years old.
Oh.
And there was like other like surfing, tennis. I mean, just everything.
You can surf?
Yeah, I surfed. I did contests for a while when I was like a kid.
You can get into the tunnel.
No, not now. I can't do shit. I don't surf at all.
Get it?
Yeah. Now everyone's like, do you still surf? Because it was like a big part of my growing up, and my brothers are big surfers, and like our family trips, we would drive down the coast of Baja and do like surf trips. That was like our family.
Is that where the big waves are?
I mean, there were waves. Yeah.
Did you talk like a surf person?
I don't think so. so because I was always a big reader. But then also wherever I am, people always go, "Where's your accent from?" And I'm like, I didn't know I had an accent.
I know. I think you have a way of talking.
Oh, okay.
I don't think you have an accent.
Yeah, because but like when
do
I
you come from the land of yell.
Do I?
Where do they talk like this?
Oh, I know. Well, you know, I'm a maniac on stage.
It's good, but you're a different kind of maniac. You're like it's like the volleyball jumping. It's like you're not like manic.
Yeah.
But you're, you know, calculatingly explosive.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah. Like people always,
you got a good build.
Thank you. People will always be like, where did that character come from? And I'm like, it's not a character. It's like my id, yeah. You know?
It's just a slightly amplified me.
It's like the crazy part of me.
Yeah.
You know, which feels good because like I can be pretty introverted and like I feel like a pretty gentle person. So like I think it started like my legs shook on stage for the first 8 months that I did comedy. And so I think that's sort of like where it came from.
From your leg shaking? You're like, my id's in my legs. I gotta get it out.
Like, no, like I think I thought like naturally that I had to be like forceful or something because I was afraid or like, or
yeah, it, yeah, you're yelling at the fear.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Well, that's what happens if you do it right. You figure out who you are up there.
Yeah.
Or else you just kind of blah through it.
Yeah. And I also think like I felt like I could be what I wish I could sometimes be in my real life. Like
yeah.
More powerful.
Like a fuck you person.
Yeah.
I wish I was more fuck you-ish.
No, I'm not. Yeah, because I'm just not like that at all. And so it feels kind of nice.
Well, that's interesting that you're aware of that. That like, you know, it's organically you, but you know, it's sort of like having a black belt. Like, I can't use this in real life. Because I would have no friends and it would be difficult at coffee shops. But I'd be memorable, but yeah. Maybe not allowed back in.
Yeah, and I don't have that desire to, like, operate from that place in my regular life, but it just feels fun on stage.
Well, it's the right place for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think it speaks to everybody's id on some level, right?
Yeah.
That's sort of what you're activating.
Yeah.
But, all right, so you're at UCLA. You fucked up your knee. You can't jump anymore. The volleyball dream. The volleyball dream is dead, and you're just there, and you're like, well, what do I do with all these shorts?
I fucking hated those shorts. To this day, I can't even, I'm stunned. I'm like, what perv decided that this was the uniform for girls volleyball? Like, no other sports have those. Like, everyone else just gets regular shorts.
Yeah, and you guys are like, these skin tight little?
Skin tight. Like, when I was in college, the ones we had to wear had a half inch inseam.
What is that?
Did great for getting people in the stands, but besides that, I just found it humiliating.
Always?
Yeah.
Like, I'm trying to think, what does a half inch inseam mean?
It means it's like that much, like, past.
Oh, right.
That's
above
how
your
short they
yeah.
You know.
Oh yeah, yeah. I can't picture it. I gotta get into this volleyball thing.
Yeah, you should check it out.
Be one of those guys going to all the games. There's that guy again.
Sometimes, like comics will be like, "Hey, we should go to a UCLA volleyball game."
Really? Did you say that to you?
I'm like, "Oh, are you really into volleyball?"
yeah. But for you, that'd be like triggering. Your legs would start shaking again. Your knee would hurt.
My legs didn't start shaking volleyball. They only shook on stage.
So what did you end up like studying at UCLA?
I did English.
Oh, really?
I was always like a huge book nerd growing up.
So English, how did that work there? Because I did English too. And how did it work there? Did you have to like have a focus? Of some kind?
No, I didn't. I didn't have to do that. I mean, I had amazing professors that were, like one of my professors was Mona Simpson, incredible author. Like she was my creative writer.
So you were
teacher.
Writing?
I mean, a little bit. Like I'd always wanted to be a writer, but I don't know if I had that much confidence. You know?
Did you write some poetry?
I've done that, definitely. You know I have.
Yeah, yeah.
A real just sensitive soul.
Have you looked at that lately?
No.
I think you should bring some of your poems on stage and just read them as your id.
You know what I've always done, though? I have journaled since I was a little kid. And so I have journals from like every year of my life.
It's interesting how you write in a journal, right?
Yeah.
I mean, because it's so direct. Because you're not trying to do anything other than, you know, get it down.
Yeah.
I didn't journal my whole life, but I started journaling after my second divorce when I was really shattered.
Yeah.
And I just, every day I did it. And I have them, and no one can ever see them.
I talk about this all the time. I've told my friends, like, if anything happens to me, you break in there and burn the millions of journals I have.
Yeah. Because because you want to at least be honest with yourself.
Yes.
So you put it out there so you get it out of you.
Yeah.
And there it is.
Yeah.
I was in that period where I was like heartbroken. I was writing all this shit. And I was like, you know, journaling about like, you know, I'm just like, I'm going to fuck her out of my heart, you know. You know, just like this.
That's poetic.
You know, like that kind of, and just like all the details of stuff. And one time I was working up in Palo Alto at Roosters.
Yes.
You've been there? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm going there this summer. Yay.
And I was working with a couple of comics. Oh, it doesn't matter. It was Jacob Siroff and his then wife and their kids, right? And, you know, I went over to their hotel and hung out like after a show or before a show. And I left my fucking journal there that I was writing.
Oh,
and
my heart is like.
I know. And to this day, like I ran when I realized it, I'm like, oh, no, the comics have it. And I was like, I ran back. I'm like, did I leave this book there? And they gave it to me. I'm like, oh, no, they read the stuff. And to this day, I don't know. But it's okay.
I wonder, you know what?
But there's nothing bad in there other than my vulnerability.
Oh, I think like mine is so humiliating. Like I write prayers in there. I mean, just like I would not want anyone to see anything. The first page of every journal that I have, and I showed it to my parents before.
Yeah.
It says, do not read. If you read this, like hex will be put on your entire bloodline in perpetuity.
And you still do that?
If every journal, if lost, my phone number. Yeah.
Do you ever lose one?
It starts with a threat. No, I don't lose it because I rarely bring it out of my house.
Yeah. I tried to read some of that stuff and it was just so painful and weird.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know what to do with it.
Yeah, I was on a tour with Jeselnik last year, and I'd always be writing in my journal, and like, I would be like, put my arm around it, and he'd be like, I'm not reading your stupid diary. He's like, I don't care about your dumb diary. You can quit acting like you're hiding it from me.
He's actually, turns out to be a pretty sweet guy.
He's so sweet.
Yeah.
I love him.
And like, you know, like if he read it, he'd probably give you some lighthearted jabs, but he wouldn't hold it against you.
Yeah, it's so funny because like his persona is so intimidating.
Yeah.
I was like so scared of him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
For no reason, only for just seeing him on stage.
Yeah.
But he's like so nice and he's so also supportive of female comics.
Yeah.
But like in a low-key way where he never mentions it. You know what I mean?
Well, he uses you guys.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I you know, and he's like, I think like he's one of those guys that got successful and got sweeter.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I remember when I first interviewed him, he was like pretty fuck you-ish. Not to me.
He likes you a lot. He's told me that many times.
Oh, I love him.
Yeah.
We get our haircut at the same place.
So yes, we've talked about that.
Because I'm like, I need to change it up. I got some money. I want to get a really good haircut. Who would possibly be the person to talk to? I'm like, Jasmine.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, like early on before he was big, you know, he had a little more of a anger thing, but now he's like this, like, he's just a decent guy, sweet guy.
Yeah, I mean, I never knew him then, so.
Well, he wasn't a bad guy, it was harder to get past the character.
Totally.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, that's nice you went out with him. But yeah, the journal thing, I don't do it anymore.
Oh, really?
No, I don't.
Well, I'm just like, I have all this. I need to empty it out. Who am I going to? I'm not going to dump this on anyone, you know?
Yeah.
It's such a habit to me. I do it every day.
What are the prayers?
I pray to God.
Yeah.
Whatever God is, I'm not sure.
Yeah, but you do it?
Divine loving intelligence.
Yeah.
Yeah, I pray. Yeah. I like to pray.
Yeah, I've done it before to the big nothing. I like to throw my fears into the big hole.
Yeah, I think that's good. Got to put them somewhere, right?
Yeah, someone told me that, like, you know, whether you believe or not, people have been praying since the beginning of time. So somehow it's etched into the kind of universal neural pathway.
Yeah.
So whether you believe or not, the act of doing it is still proactive.
Yeah, and reverent. And it's sort of...
humble, too.
Humble, yeah, because you're getting outside of yourself.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you get the English degree.
Uh-huh.
And so you're all set.
And, you know, like, my family has, really, like, immigrant mentality. Like, everything about, even though they're not immigrants.
Yeah.
But, like, just, like, work ethic is everything, you know, yeah. All this stuff. And, like, I had always been, like, you know, I want to be, like, an artist. And my dad would be like, well, yeah, everyone wants that. What? I'd like to be a painter. Get a job, you know?
Yeah.
And so there was definitely not any encouragement like, you can be any, go for your insane dream or anything.
Yeah.
But I had always wanted to be, in my mind, a writer. Like, I had never thought, I think when I was, like, a little kid, I wanted to be an actor as, like, the youngest child,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
I was
sure.
Like, look at me! And I would try out for plays at school and, like, get the part, but I wouldn't be able to do it because my sports schedule was too insane. So I never got to do, even at, like, 10 years old, yeah, I was, like, had shit every fucking day.
So they liked that part of the work ethic.
Oh, yeah, they loved it.
Yeah, they're like, this is going to give her a good sense of...
Well, also, I mean, like, I did have, like, just what you were talking about, like, freaky, just, like, genetic talent.
Yeah.
Like, sports-wise.
Yeah.
Just, like, out the gate, like...
Yeah, but also, you know how to lose, right?
I will say what has helped me so much as an athlete, like... growing up, like, in comedy, whereas, like, sometimes my friends or, like, comedians, like, well, they'll be like, fuck that guy, he got this, and didn't.
Right.
And that never crosses my mind. I'm like, oh, I wasn't good enough.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm not sure that's better, but I like
the
story.
No, it's not. You know, it's
I have to work harder.
Totally. Yeah.
Or, I guess, like, that's good, if you put it that way.
Or, like, I... still have one of the things I do like about myself is that, like, I have an ability to be genuinely happy for it. Like, I'm really good at being happy for people. I can still be sad for myself at the same time.
That's
but
good.
Like, that comes naturally to me, thank God.
That's good.
Yeah.
So your insecurity is not malignant.
I would say that I, like, internalize it instead of externalize it.
Right. You don't. Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know anything about that, but I appreciate it.
I mean, look, I still have the pressure I put on myself is
right, but you keep it in, and then you explode on stage. You don't be like, fuck that guy, or like, why'd they get that?
Or also, I've never understood that because I'm like, they didn't book themselves. Someone chose them. It's not their fault.
And also, like, that, like, who's choosing anything anymore? Like, it seems like show business is contracting.
Sure.
To the point where if you don't carve your own way, then, you know, there's no one giving away shots anymore.
Yeah, I mean, the industry seems to be just in total free fall where it's changing every second. And I, even with, like, this clip culture that we're talking about, it's like, on one hand, I'm really happy for those people who are just these comedians that are just, like, excellent at marketing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm like, good for them, like... carving out a career for themselves that 5-10 years ago would have not been possible for their level. I mean, some of these, the talent, you know what I'm saying?
So I see how you do it. You present a logical and seemingly objective argument for why shitty comics get successful, but you're happy for them.
No. So not, I would only say half of them are shitty. So half of them are incredible comics who also have the depths of energy inside them.
I get what you're saying. It's like, you know, if you believe in the process or the craft, or you're in it for, you know, personally creative reasons and not just to, you know, pull a crowd for crowd work, you know, it's different.
Yeah.
You know, like if you believe in sort of like, you know, going through the paces of finding yourself as a comic, that still has to mean something.
Yeah, totally. But I mean, like, also, like, I cannot fault anyone who found a way to build their own audience.
I know, because it's impossible.
Yeah, I'm like, that, to me, I'm like, that's amazing, and yeah. I will give them their flowers. God bless
them. Sure. I mean, you'd rather not have, like, you know, sometimes because clubs are clubs, and they just want to sell tickets, you know, you'll get people in there that aren't really even doing comedy, per se.
Yeah, 100%.
But they brought the crowds in, so whatever.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I understand that, and I try to tell people that all the time. You know, these fucking people that, you know, think it's easy for anybody, especially around this Nepo baby thing. It's like, dude, 99% of people come from regular backgrounds.
Right.
Nobody, no family wants their kid to do this.
Not at all.
And it's like, you know, it just comes from this weird singular focus and personal persistence that anybody breaks through at all, even for a minute.
Totally.
So did you do the writing? You're going to be a writer?
Oh, yeah. I did business for a couple of years just because I needed a job.
What do you mean, after college?
Yeah.
Well, you did business.
I did business. I did real estate and...
Wow, in Santa Barbara?
No, in Orange County.
Oh, wait, where's Santa Barbara?
Santa Barbara is about...
Different? It's the other way?
An hour and a half north of LA, or 2 hours or something.
It's north?
Yeah.
What's down the other way? Oh, San Clemente. Santa Barbara's up there, and then Orange County's closer to here?
San Clemente is Orange County.
Okay.
That's, like, basically right where I grew up.
Okay, oh, yeah, right. So, that's right. So Santa Barbara's the other way.
Yeah.
And San Clemente, yeah, is towards San Diego.
Yeah, basically, like, where I grew up is equidistant, like, halfway point between LA and San Diego.
What a fucking dumb drive that is. Jesus Christ.
You
know, everybody's like, you know, like, yeah, you can get down there an hour and a half. In what world? There's no way to get to San Diego under 4 hours unless you walk or take the train.
I don't know you that well, but I feel like I know you. And I can just, I feel like in my soul that you, like, hate San Diego.
Once I'm down there, I'm all right. But usually it takes me a day to just come down from the aggravation of not understanding how it could take so long to get there.
Yeah.
And I was going to take the train last time, and then the train got fucked up because the mudslide just took the goddamn tracks out. I'm like, God damn it. When do I even leave to get there and not be aggravated? Right?
Yeah.
But I don't mind San Diego. I played at a really weird place there, and I did well. The last time I was there, I had a broken foot and I didn't know it was broken.
Oh.
Do you know that North Park Observatory Theater?
I don't think so.
It's a weird place. It almost looks like a circus somehow.
Oh.
But I played there. I went down there. I hurt my foot at the gym and I'm like, oh, it's probably just a sprain. And then I'm like, I went down there. I did 2 shows on a broken foot.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, man.
You're
show must go on.
Yeah, wait.
Hobbling around.
Wait, how'd you break
heel.
It at the gym?
I'm just like dumb. Like, I was doing step-ups, and I came down, and my foot, you know, went under me.
Sure.
Because of, like, because Hoka sneakers are, like, wearing fucking high heels.
Like moon boots.
The
I
fuck
have
is
them.
That? I mean, yeah, you can run in them, but you can't lift weights. It's so stupid, you know, when you realize, like, these are, like, 3-inch heels.
Yeah, they are like moon boot, like, launching pads.
Yeah.
Comfortable, though.
They're comfortable, but not flat shoes from here on out. I had to ride out that broken foot, hobbling around with that fucking boot for 3 months.
No.
But anyway, so that's where you grew up, there, mm-hmm. and you're selling real estate.
Oh, yeah. And, like, I had to be in the office at 6 a.m. I was, like, the only female broker, and I had to be in the office at 6 a.m. every day.
Yeah.
And it was, like, really that culture of, like, whoever is in the office for as many hours as possible, you know?
Yeah.
And all I was doing was, like, cold calling, and I was just, like, look, I was like, I'm going to die under these fluorescent lights. There has to be more. Yeah. And I was like, I'm going to wait till I get like a good check and see if that changes anything.
Yeah.
I got the first one. I was like, nope, I feel nothing. and then I was like, well, what would I do if I could do anything? Like, and I was like, oh, I want to be a novelist. Cause like, that's really all I cared about was like books besides, you know? And, then I applied to some MFA programs and I applied to the four easiest ones I could find. And then one no way school in New York that no prayer. And then I got rejected from the four easy schools and I got into the good new one. School in New York.
The new school?
Yeah. So then I moved there and that's how I got to New York.
Holy shit. So that's where it all happened. I know the new school.
Yeah, like I was wanted to be a novelist.
That's a good school.
Yeah, I mean it was incredible. Like we got the authors that they brought in and like people that were in my tiny classes are like now really
big real novels. Writers.
Yeah, like it was really great. And then of course I started comedy like in the middle of that. Just out of nowhere. Like, I didn't see my first comedy show until I was 25.
That's wild.
Yeah, like, I didn't grow up seeing any comedy. I didn't watch comedy. Like, I had no reference
That's
for
crazy.
Comedy.
Crazy.
I know.
Here's what I learned at the new school. Like, I decided, like, in my 30s, I'm like, you know, I could probably understand philosophy now. So I took a philosophy class at the new school. And I didn't understand any of it. It was all based on logic. And it was just like, it was not, I thought we were going to talk about stuff, right? And it was just like math. And I was like bummed out. And I was being a smart ass and cracking jokes like I was in high school. And then one day the teacher was in the elevator with me. And he says, why'd you take my class? You know, and I said, because I wanted to, expand my mind and learn about philosophy. He says, well, you can expand your mind two ways. Either you can put new stuff in there or you can heat up what's already in there so it expands. And I'm like, yeah, that's more my speed. Like, you totally fucking...
You're like, we're still doing riddles even in the elevator?
Yeah.
It's so funny that you say that about philosophy because when I... was in college, I was like, oh, I'm going to major in philosophy. My dad was like, you know, what the hell? But I took like the first course and I was like, oh, this is debate with no answer. My personal hell.
Yeah.
I was like, this is not at all what I thought it was going to be. Yeah.
So, but did you debate?
No.
Oh.
I hate debate.
Oh, for me, eventually, you know, even if I knew how to debate, I would get to the point where I'd be like, go fuck yourself.
I just hate, like, probably because I'm so, like, sensitive. I just, like, hate arguing for the sake of arguing. Like, it just feels stressful. Because debate to me is not like, in my mind anyways, what debate is. It's like not having a casual conversation. It's like someone really wanting to change your point of view on something.
Through argument.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't find that I get into those kind of arguments anymore. But when I do, I'm surprised that I do have some core beliefs. So every once in a while, an argument is sort of like, yeah, I have a few beliefs. And now we can put them away.
I stand for something.
Yeah. I have a point of view on that.
Right.
But so you're at the new school, and why do you go to a comedy show? How does that happen?
Well, I had been dating a guy who had just started comedy from my hometown before I moved to New York, and he showed me comedy.
So you went with him or you didn't?
No. I got into grad school, of course, like never thought I'd be moving to New York.
Yeah.
Moved there and then like, you know.
But he showed you like comics?
Yeah, he introduced me to comedy. Actually, one of the first shows he took me to was yours with Eddie Pepitone and... who I'm obsessed with Eddie Pepitone.
Yeah.
Like, he makes me laugh so hard.
He's
and then Maria Bamford.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It was the three of us?
It was the three of you guys at the Ice House.
Wow.
Yeah, like, I don't know, probably 12 years ago or something.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and I was like, this is incredible. So I, like, quickly became such a fan, but, like, it never, ever, ever crossed my mind. I was like, I'm a writer, you know, I would never want, like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, but that's a pretty powerful trio.
It was. I was like mystified.
That is totally like off the grid. Three comics.
Perfect lineup.
Yeah.
All three different.
But also like all three, not standard.
No.
Comics.
Yeah.
Was it like, I'm trying to think what that show would be. Was I headlining?
I think so.
Because like I probably was able to, you know, put my show together.
Yeah.
And I had them on there.
Yeah.
And then I just struggled.
No, you did not struggle. funny you even say that because my boyfriend at the time got mad at me for laughing too much.
Yeah. The new comic?
Yeah. And I was like, I think if you like don't like your loved one's greatest expression of joy, there could be a problem.
And then he said, fuck that guy. Fuck them.
He loved you guys. He just like probably didn't like me.
I love those two. Those two are they're the outliers. They're the best. Maria's the best.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like...
Eddie just shot a special, I think, the other
night. I know. And, like, I saw his last one. Like, I made sure I blocked out and I went live, like, his special that was shot at Dynasty Typewriter.
Yeah.
And I was like, that was one of the hardest times I've ever laughed. Because, you know, when you're, like, around comedy for so long, when you're watching it, you're like, oh, that's a good joke, but you're not like, actually laughing.
Yeah, yeah, no, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I was just like... Because he's just so wild. Like, yeah, I love it.
And he's also like, he's sort of like you in that, you know, off stage, he's like so sweet. And,
so sweet.
And kind of self, not deprecating, like he's self-aware, but he's just so sweet. But he gets up there and then all of a sudden we're here.
Yeah. You know, like I've actually, since I have got past at the store, like, probably a year ago, but like I'll see you there all the time, but like I would never say hello to you because I'm too shy. And Eddie is the one person ever in my life that I ever asked for a picture with.
Yeah.
That I have. I'm like, that's the one person I've ever asked for a picture with. I was just I'm too, because like I'm too shy to like talk to.
Now.
Yeah.
Now you're going to be like, hey, Mark.
Yeah, now I'm going to be thrilled. Yeah. I saw you there I didn't see you there last night, but I saw your name on the marquee. We were there at the same time, but I never saw you.
Oh, yeah, I just ducked into the main room and got out, I guess. I didn't hang.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty good last night.
Yeah.
Were you playing there?
Yeah.
Where? OR?
Original Room, yeah. Mm. It was great.
Was it?
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah,
so,
I love it.
So you go, where do you go to New York? Who drags you to the show? You just went by yourself?
Oh, so I started writing for Splitsider, interviewing comedians because
what was that guy's name? Dylan? Was he there?
No. You know, it's funny. I never even met the people that I was writing for them like for free.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, and I just become a fan of comedy. And I always joke around comedians now, like I wasn't writing anything pieces or writing anything about anyone, I was just interviewing people, and I'd be like one intro paragraph and then interview them.
Yeah.
But I was just like, just to be mindful of the blogs, because like I'm thinking this is someone who literally discovered comedy 6 months before I was writing about it, and like I wasn't writing reviewing anyone or anything.
What were you doing?
I was just interviewing people.
Oh,
yeah,
for Splitsider.
Yeah, can I tell you something?
Yeah,
I interviewed you. When I was interning at W Magazine,
yeah,
the high fashion, and okay. And your show was just about to come out, and I like
Marin,
yeah, and I begged my supervisor if I could interview you, and it was like 5 minutes with like Mark Maron, and I was like, oh, this is so exciting.
Yeah, how was it?
It was great. It was a thrill for me.
What we did on the phone?
Yeah.
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah. My manager was like, are you going to tell him you interviewed him? I was like, I don't know. I don't sound dorky.
No, I whenever I hear stories like that, like, you know, any sort of thing like, yeah, you're not going to remember this. I'm like, oh, God, here we go. What did I?
But I interviewed so many comics before I started comedy. Like, I interviewed Anthony, and I didn't tell him till like the last week of tour. And he's like, you're so weird. Why are you just telling me that now?
That's a very interesting. What did you learn from that, though? I mean, were your questions coming from a sort of curiosity to do it?
No. Well, at least not consciously. Like, I had no awareness and, like, I had no desire to start comedy. Yeah. And then, like, I pitched an article about Michael Che. He just did 1 week guest writing for SNL.
Yeah.
W thing when I was an intern, and I was his first piece of press ever.
Oh, wow.
And that interview, I asked questions that, like, in hindsight was clearly someone wanting to start. Because I was like, and what was the exact day that you started, like, and what did, you know, like, these questions that were crazy.
Have you talked to him since?
Yeah. I mean, not recently, like, anytime I go back to New York or whatever, but, like, he's always just so sweet.
So when did you do it?
Well, so, like, two days later after that interview, it came to me in the shower.
Yeah.
And I had broken up with that guy, and I was, like, pretty heartbroken, and I was like, oh, nothing can hurt me now.
Yeah.
You know, I might as well. Like, after the thought came to me, and then I just started, like, immediately.
Where at?
I took a class.
With?
At Gotham Comedy Club.
With who?
I believe his name was Jim. But, of course, you don't learn anything in those classes.
But you get to go on.
Well, you get to go on. The main benefit is with people who have never done it before.
Right.
So that's the whole thing.
You get a kind of a safe start.
Yeah, like, they don't teach you anything. They can't teach you how to, like, be funny or write a joke. But, yeah, and then I just started doing...
Jim Mandrinos.
Yes! Oh, my God, I can't believe you remembered that. Do you know him still?
I know him still as much as I know anybody past, but I knew he taught.
Whoa, you have a laser memory.
He's been around a while. I mean, yeah, Jim Mandrino, sure.
But yeah, and then I just got obsessed, and like I had like every temp job. I had every temp job while going to grad school, while like just doing three open mics a night. Like,
what was the open mic scene like? Were you going to Brooklyn and like...
Brooklyn and Manhattan, and it was so good, like, and it would be like, I would be like, you know, really making sure I was working on my writing before each thing, because there were so many good comics at the mics.
Yeah. Who was around?
Well, Rosebud, obviously, Sydney, Marie, Reggie Conquest, like, some of these people, like Julio Torres, he was just amazing off the bat.
Yeah.
Joe Pera, Dan Licata.
Wow. So, like, you had a pretty good crew of people that were doing work.
Yeah, it was good.
And then when did you just start working?
Well, I just randomly got on a TV show, like an MTV show, like 2 years in.
Which one? That's like the way it was in the old days.
Yeah, it was like I called the casting director was at a party and I didn't even know she was a casting director.
Yeah.
And then she just messaged me. She was like, you want to audition for this? And I left my computer coding job that I lied to get in the middle of the day
to go audition.
They're like, it takes 3 hours because they're so far behind. I'm like, I'm probably going to get fired from this job for going to this audition.
Yeah.
Then I found out, like, I got it, and it was, like, a female prank show that was Nicole Byer.
Yeah.
Mateo Lane.
Yep.
Megan Gailey, Jade Catapretta, and me, and it was, like, a prank show, like, under the girl code thing.
Yeah.
And so it sort of started being, like, I didn't, like, I was doing comedy, but, like, not in a way that I thought I was, like, doing some fun New York thing.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't think it was going to be my career.
Right.
At all.
So how long that show run?
One season. One and done. Back to the temp jobs. Real fast.
Did you lose the computer job?
Yeah. I got another one after, though. Yeah.
So, but did that, you know, kind of put some wind in your sails?
Oh, totally. Like, I mean, just even from the start with comedy, the first time I was like, oh, this is it. I was like, oh, this is what I've been searching for my whole life. Like, I just felt it immediately because, you know, I was like thinking I was going to be a novelist. I was like, oh, this is a little different than 14 hours alone in a room.
Oh, yeah. Trying to write pages and pages where you can write three things and then go try it and be like, that's a good day.
Yeah. No,
and one of them works good.
A lot of my friends, like in my grad school program,
yeah,
they just published the novel that they started working on.
Just now.
Yeah, and it was like about the same time as like that it took me to do like an hour special.
Yeah, two of my best friends are novelists. It's a rough road.
Yeah.
But like I could never do that. Jesus Christ.
I think you could.
Not a novel. I mean, I'm pretty good at writing and talking about me.
Yeah.
So and the idea of writing a novel, I don't know. It's writing is so, that writing books, it's like it just hangs over you.
I know.
Like unless it's like you're fucking like, unless it's like it's the most important thing in the world to you.
Right.
It's a fucking nightmare.
Yeah, and just the amount of focus you have to have is.
And then just to write.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
Yeah.
You know, I like thinking about stuff and working it out on stage and then, you know, hammering away at it. I write a newsletter every week and I put my heart into it.
Oh, do? I got to subscribe.
Yeah, I've been doing it for years. There's hundreds of them.
Oh.
It's just like every Sunday I sit down. It's almost like a weekly journal in a way with some thoughts. And you know, it's so funny because I don't know how many people read it.
Right.
But do you know Mike Kaplan?
Yeah.
The comic?
Uh-huh.
He's a big fan of it.
He's so sweet.
Sweetest guy.
Yeah.
And every week I write it and he'll email me and take out little pieces of it. Like, this is good.
Right.
This is real nice.
Yeah.
Almost like, you know, he's like editing for the good stuff.
Yeah.
And now because he's been doing it so long, I'm thinking like, oh, I got to think of something Michael.
You're writing for your audience.
I'm writing for my audience of
Mike
one.
Kaplan.
Mike Kaplan.
That probably makes him super happy.
Well, it's weird because, you know, getting feedback from that kind of writing doesn't happen that often. And it's just, you know, it's just prose or little poetic things I'm thinking.
Yeah.
But it is sort of encouraging. And I do find that, like, if he doesn't write me, I'm like,
oh, man. Oh, God, this
tanked
week.
It. Yeah, didn't fucking get a nugget. No nuggets this week for Mike.
Guess this week wasn't a hit, Mike.
So then you just kind of plowing away in New York and you got other opportunities and stuff?
Yeah, and like I kept slowly like getting, you know, I got the new faces and I got the
in one of the last ones probably.
This was what year? I got it like 2017, I think.
8 minutes, Room Full of Industry.
6 minutes.
Six.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then
you popped.
I no, not from that really. Like I mean, my year it was. I think they've kind of changed it a little bit where they go back to people without a bunch of credits. But like my year was like Sam J, Taylor Tomlinson, Rami, like everyone in my class. Everyone had already been on TV many times.
Well, it wasn't the same. They really couldn't pull off what they used to with social media now. But before it was like before there was that.
Yeah.
I mean, these were people they had to go find that no one had seen before.
Right.
So the idea was like, you know, someone would come throw money at you.
Yeah.
But now it's just sort of like, well, they're kind of new faces.
Yeah.
I one time did the, I think I did the Remember These Guys show. You might have missed these guys.
How did that go?
I got a deal out of it.
Hell yeah.
In 2001.
Oh, that's incredible.
It was like me and Ron White.
Whoa.
And I think Jeremy Hotz. Definitely, you know, guys who had been around, but it kind of gave me a little boost.
Yeah, when I started in 2013 and I like listened to podcasts and I remember like you guys always talking about like, yeah, and remember you just, all the new faces would get a deal and like, I don't think anyone's gotten a deal from, besides getting like Saturday Night Live, but that's not like these development
different.
Deals.
No, the development deal days are long gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were good though. A lot of people made a lot of money for almost doing something.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
So when did you, you know, Did you do the Tonight Show and stuff?
I did Corden.
How was that? The pretend conversation guy. Like, I'm going to put you on a couch with somebody, but I'm only going to talk to you separately, and I'll interject a lot. It's the illusion of conversation.
It was really great. And you know what was crazy about it is I kind of just forgot. Like, I accidentally used 1 minute of my set saying hello to Reggie Watts, saying hello to James Corden.
Oh, so you did stand-up.
Oh, yeah, I did stand-up.
Oh, that's different.
Oh, like, is that what you meant?
No, I just do panel.
Oh, well, yeah,
and it was
yeah,
just like, it was hard to score.
Yeah.
I like to do panel.
Yeah, well, I mean, sounds great.
But even when I was not famous at all, like, I fought to do panel on Conan.
Right.
Because like, I did stand-up on Conan, like, a couple of times early on.
Yeah.
And then I was, like, I always liked watching, like, Richard Lewis or Jay Leno. The guys who sat down and did sit-down stand-up. I'm like, why can't I do that?
Totally.
And he let me do it. And apparently it caused him a lot of trouble. Because, like, because he let me do it and we had this rapport.
Yeah.
All the comics are like, why can't I sit down like Maron?
Yeah.
And he's like, because that's Maron's thing.
Right.
And I'm like, thank God.
Yeah.
And you know how much it built my career? Zero.
I know. I think that's all late night now. It's
but
just
this was
like,
in the 90s. I couldn't like you. And I always used to think like, I got to quit changing my haircut. I got to decide on a look. It's not landing.
I always wanted to do Conan so badly, but I never, because I was like, oh, I'm kooky. Like, will be the direction I go.
Well, that was always good because I'd come out there and be like, oh, here we go. How's he going to alienate the people?
Yeah.
90% of the time, my first joke would just go,
oh, really?
And be like, oh, well, what happened? You know, I'm like, all right, dig out. So I can dig out of this hole. Oh, my God. So you just did Corden?
I did Corden.
Right, you should be on The Tonight Show.
I want to be on The Tonight Show.
What's the problem?
Yeah, I don't know. Can you call him up?
Yeah. I don't know him that like that. But it seems like a crazy oversight.
Mm.
What about Colbert?
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to do Colbert.
You're ready.
Yeah, I'm ready for another late night set.
Yeah.
I could send one tomorrow.
So, okay, so do you do writing jobs and do you do other stuff?
Well, I do a good amount of voiceover. I haven't had a writing job. I would love one. I've been pitching my own shows for a while.
Yeah. So the voiceovers, do you use this voice and then the other one?
Yeah. I call that Mark.
Which one do you want?
That's what they say. Sometimes they go like, they'll be like, oh, we want you to do your WWE voice.
Oh,
yeah. And then other times, like, I'll be playing, like, the last job I did, I was playing an 8-year-old boy. So it just changes all the time.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
And I watched a special.
Oh, thank you. That's so nice of you.
What'd you call it?
Live from the Big Dog.
Yeah, Live from the Big Dog.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how was that put together?
Well, that was part of Veep's Live Nation's new streamer. They're like,
yeah,
first
I know
class.
Bart. Yeah.
Yeah, Bart is just a dream. I love him so much.
That guy's been in every job ever. Like, there are guys in comedy that have been on that side of it where you're like, oh, you're working here now?
Totally.
For 30 years.
Yeah. And he's like one of these people where you're like, you are so lovely to work with.
He's a sweet guy.
Like, he loves comedy.
Yeah, one of the few sweet guys.
Totally. Yeah. He's so nice. Yeah. And I wanted to do my first special in LA. So, like, I could have my friends and family come. Because a lot of my friends are like, I would never want that. I would never. And I'm like, no, I want it. Like,
yeah.
Because it feels like homey and fun to me.
So they were in the room?
Yes.
Like who? Your brothers?
My brothers and my parents, which was like their first time seeing me do comedy.
What?
Yeah.
How'd they react?
They really liked it. Like, my dad cried because he was so proud, which, that really meant a lot to me because they have not loved my choice in career.
Yeah, it's always something, that moment where they're like, oh, she can do it.
Yeah, I mean, like, I still don't think that's what they want, but they were like, oh, she is doing it. And
she's successful.
Yeah, and it went well.
But they got to appreciate the work ethic. Like, this work ethic is crazy.
Yeah.
Because you're your own boss.
It totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you just grinded it out in New York for how many years?
I left after 5.5 years. Like, I moved to L.A. in 2018.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you did the special what? Just recently?
Yeah.
And then you decided on, like, 42 minutes?
It's 43, but funny story about that. I forgot 6 minutes of jokes.
What?
Yeah, I probably shouldn't be saying that.
What do you think people are going to be like? Nah, that was what was missing. Is it those six? You want to do them?
No, but it was so like, and I didn't even think about the extra like emotional factor of my parents being there.
Oh yeah, or like, you didn't think of it.
I didn't think.
That's
about
why people
it.
Are like, "What are you doing?"
I didn't think about it like or anything, and I didn't. I had put my timer. I put my phone recording backstage, and I got off stage, and it said 43 minutes, and I was like so confused because I got off stage and I was thrilled. I was like, I'm so like, that was.
What were you planning on doing?
It was like 49.
Oh.
Was what I shopped.
Right.
And then I was like, what jokes did I forget?
Yeah.
You know?
Was
and
it
then
one
I,
chunk?
No, it was like little, one main chunk and then like a few other things that like I only slowly realized like over time what it was like besides the chunk.
Yeah.
Of what the few other ones.
Yeah,
were.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I do that all the time.
You do? Like, have you done that on a special?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But like, I still have this like hour mentality.
Right.
And nobody wants them anymore.
Well, you know. I think it's just whatever you want to do.
No,
right
they
now.
Definitely don't want you. Yeah, I appreciate your idea, but they're like, you know, I'm like, can we do 73? They're like, it's a little long. I'm like, what are you talking? Like, they don't realize that they're the ones responsible for creating this attention span that they've decided people don't have.
Right.
Like, I mean, look. You may not get everybody, but there are still people in the world that are going to sit through till the end of the thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I respect it. Like, I like when anyone makes a hard choice on anything, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I just plow away and then, like, shave it out. You
right.
know, like, but I'm always going to lose stuff.
Yeah.
And, like, some things are lost forever.
Right.
But I don't know how, like, I'm always generating on stage. You know, like that's where it all happens. Like there's nothing on paper to indicate that I write jokes.
I'm so amazed by you because I'm the exact opposite.
No, but it shows because, you know, like I don't know that I think it's a way that I, you know, protect myself from, I don't know if it's failure, but like sometimes if I have a joke that's structured like a joke and I have them, they happen. But, like, I'm sort of like, all right, well, that was easy. You know, I get, like I know that works. Like, it's just a joke.
I get what you're saying.
And I use them at the beginning.
Yeah.
To sort of get in. But then I, like, expand and try. You know, every long-form thing has jokes in it. But I don't like knowing. Like, I like knowing there's gaps for them to grow.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I can only do that when I have a very clear skeleton of the joke
already in existence. Yeah.
But that's probably because I'm too fearful. Like, I would love to go on stage to trust myself enough to just organically come up with stuff.
Yeah, but you trust yourself enough to sort of, like, you know that you're building towards something, and it's not just, like, a turn of phrase. I mean, you trust yourself enough to, you know, go at Triscuits for a fairly... operatic bit of business that repeats. So like I couldn't imagine knowing like I'm gonna do it again. So that's
yeah, but like, you know, like I don't do crowd work because I'm like I only
do it if I have to.
I'm like, I don't even like talking to strangers in regular life.
Yeah. Right. Especially these weirdos that come to see you.
No, I like you guys very much. If you're listening, thank you so much.
No, they love you. They love you. But I only do crowd work. I think it's like a skill you should have.
Yeah. But like, I mean, that takes confidence, the crowd work.
Well, kind of. But I think, like, you know, you do it kind of in, you know, when you're saying like you with the pervs.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, but that's not exchange. But like you could, I'm sure you could do it.
Yeah, I mean I'll do it like just like that's not the meat of my set. It's just like throwaway stuff. But I do envy like that freeness. But because I was a writer first, there are certain linguistic phrases and like wording that I'm really attached to that I find interesting. And I have like every joke's divided by year, month, like everything typed out like on my computer. Like, and all all my friends always used to like make fun of me. They'd be like, "Oh, you bring your book report, Blair?"
Yeah.
And I'd be like, "Well, have you ever thought about writing a joke, even one joke?" You know?
No, you can tell that, you know, you have a very specific way of phrasing because you have a very deliberate pace.
Oh, thank you.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, me, like, I feel like, you know, anytime I'm about to go on stage, I'm like, oh, I don't know if this is going to.
You know, it's crazy to think that you still feel that way because one thing that
it's not nerves. It's just sort of like.
No, I know exactly what you mean. And I still to this day, like I'm, you know, 11 years in, like I to think, you know, you've been doing it way longer than me. Like I still never know how I to start a set.
Yeah.
Like I'm always like, what am I going to open with?
Yeah,
like
yeah,
the open, the opening will plague me, I think, till death.
And then you just like, what happens to me is I have the one opening. I'm like, I know this. If this doesn't work, then it's going to be work.
Right.
So like I generally come up with one of those.
That's how I feel. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like, I need something that gives me the confidence right off the bat.
Yes. And then if that one goes, you're like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, I know I'm going to be okay out there. But sometimes the worst thing I can hear, you know, if I'm about to go on stage is for a comic to come, the one before me or two before me to come in and go like, oh, they're great. I'm like, God damn it. I'm going to ruin it.
Are there people you hate to follow or you don't want to, or maybe you don't want to say?
No, it's not a matter of following. It's a matter of like, at some point, you know, I realized, and it took me a long time to realize it, that like, look, man, you know, part of the job is, you know, you're going to have to get them around to where you are. So if somebody's just blasted the place open with either crowd work or insane energy.
Right.
Like, I'm not going to start there just because they've done that.
Yeah.
So I've got to, like, you know, realize that, you know, I do what I do.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've got to bring them to me. So if they're blasted open, the bringing them to me thing is not always going to be easy.
Yeah.
It's not going to be satisfying.
Right.
Especially on short sets.
Yeah.
You know, if you're doing an hour, hour plus for your people, like you got a lot of wiggle room.
Yeah.
But if you're just working out,
right,
you know, and they're just there for a night of comedy and you got to go out there and it's just been, you know, they're exhausted.
Yeah.
It's just sort of like, okay.
Yeah.
I know how to do it, but it's not always satisfying.
Right. I was thinking, remember, because I think you dropped in on a show and maybe they give you more time or not, but in Moon Tower, they gave us... It was 6 minute sets. And we were all like, how do you even do a 6 minute set?
Know.
You know, like for a late night set, you like plan it and you like really whittle something down with like a lot of intention. But we were all like, it's like scary to do a 6 minute set.
Yeah, it's like a TV set because you gotta
edit. You gotta go so fast.
Or you gotta just cut shit out.
Yeah, or like you don't have like time to like let anything. It's like opening joke. End, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where was that set? I remember they put me on a show.
It was at Anton's in Moon Tower that I met when I was with Rosebud, where we met.
Well, that was the music night?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that was different. No, I'd play guitar and stuff.
Oh, no, no, that wasn't.
No, it was different.
This was like a showcase that you dropped in on. Or maybe I'll just finish. I don't think so. I don't know.
I think she gave me like, you know, 12 or something.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. So you got more time than everyone else.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of course, I'm on your side.
I didn't even know if I was going to get sets.
No, no. I'm just saying, like, when we were like, oh, 6 minutes, like, we were all like, how do you even do 6 minutes?
Well, you used to have to do it for TV spots.
Yeah.
And it was always sort of like, it was this whole other skill set.
Right.
To, you know, and it used to be five.
Yeah.
For like Letterman, it was like five.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what do you even do in 5 minutes?
Yeah. And a short set, it's like you need a plan. Like,
you really got to take everything out of context.
Yeah.
And just find the ones that, hit
right
with less build.
Yeah
Well, you're doing great.
Thank you.
And it's good talking to you.
It's great talking to you. This is so much fun.
Thanks for
so
doing
happy
it. Thanks for doing
thank
it.
You
there you go. Great talk. Her new special, Blair's new special, Live from the Big Dog, is available now at veeps.com. Hang out for a minute, folks. Hey,
Just thought I'd let you know that Full Marin listeners can now enjoy an infamous live WTF recorded back in 2010 in New York City, featuring some of my favorite filthy comics, including Amy Schumer, Dave Attell, and Bobby Kelly.
You know what Dr. Steve said, though? He said that if you jerk off a lot, your primary sexual partner is yourself. And that in order to be intimate with somebody else, you have to stop doing that so you can acknowledge somebody else is there, which I think you're doing, and I'm proud of you.
Dr. Steve's a fucking dickhead.
Yeah, he sounds like a jerk off, dude. Really.
This is what it is that
you can't jerk off and have a relationship.
You know what happens is that you.
I agree with that.
Yeah, because you're a smart man. These guys are animals.
You actually get these. What happens is that you're home a lot. And she walks
around rationalize
naked.
It.
She walks around naked. She's in the shower naked. Yeah. We see each other. You get desensitized
to her
seeing her. So I actually told my wife to stop. I don't want you coming in the bathroom. I don't want to take showers. Let's just fucking save it because I see you naked. You see me naked all the time. You get desensitized to
that. You don't get desensitized from watching Bukkake movies for 6 hours a fucking day?
There's a million of them. They're all different. There's thousands. If you're one Bukkake movie,
subtle difference.
Yes, I would.
The Blue Show is now available for Full Marin subscribers. To sign up, go to the link in the episode description or go to WTFpod.com and click on WTF Plus. And a reminder before we go, this podcast is hosted by Acast. Enjoy some of my classic guitar work now.